ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भर्तृणं प्रयाणं व्रत, भर्तृणं प्रयाणं भ्रत्वा यो नु तिष्ठति धर्मवित्, यो नु तिष्ठति धर्मवित्, स पुण्यबन्धु पुरुषो, स पुण्यबन्धु पुरुषो, मरुद्देशः मोदते, मारुति सह मोदते, भ्रातृणं प्रायणं भ्रात्रा, यो नु तिष्ठति धर्मवित्, स पुण्यबन्धु पुरुषो, मरुद्भिः सह मोदते, भर्तृणं प्रायणं भ्राता, यो नु तिष्ठति धर्मवित्, स पुण्यबन्धु पुरुषो, मरुद्भिः सह मोदते। भक्तृणां प्रायणं भ्रात्रा, यो नु तिष्ठति धर्मवित्, स पुण्यबन्धु पुरुषो, मरुद्भिः मोच्यते। Bhatrinam of elder brothers, Prayanam, the path, Bhratta, a faithful brother, Jya, one who, Anutistati, follows, Dharmavit, knowing the religious principles, Saha, that, Punyabandhu, highly pious, Purusha, person, Marudbihi, the demigods of the winds, Saha, with Modate, enjoys life. Translation: a brother aware of the principles of religion follows in the footsteps of his elder brothers. Because of being highly elevated, such a pious brother gets the opportunity to associate and enjoy with demigods like the Maruts, who are all affectionate to their brothers. Please repeat. A brother aware of the principles of religion follows in the footsteps of his elder brothers. Because of being highly elevated, such a pious brother gets the opportunity to associate and enjoy with demigods like the Maruts, who are all affectionate to their brothers. According to their belief in various material relationships, people are promoted to various planets. Here it is said that one who is very faithful to his brothers should follow a path similar to theirs and get the opportunity for promotion to Marudloka. Narada Muni advised Prajapati Daksha's second group of sons to follow their elder brothers and be promoted to the spiritual world. And the purport. I was told to speak up to 35. It's not on the board, but I guess that's what they want. So, text 32. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O best of advanced Aryans, after saying this much to the sons of Prajapati Daksha, Narada Muni, whose merciful glance never goes in vain, left as he had planned. The sons of Daksha followed their elder brothers, not attempting to produce children. They engaged themselves in Krishna consciousness. Text 33. The Savalasvas took to the correct path, which is obtainable by a mode of life meant to achieve devotional service or the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like knights that have gone to the west, they have not returned even until now. 34. At this time, Prajapati Daksha observed many inauspicious signs, and he heard from various sources that his second group of sons, the Savalashvas, had followed the path of their elder brothers in accordance with the instructions of Narada. Text 35. When he heard that the Savalashvas had also left this world to engage in devotional service, Daksha was angry at Narada, and he almost fainted due to lamentation. When Daksha met Narada, Daksha's lips began to tremble in anger, and he spoke as follows. You rascal. That will come. We will hear Daksha's angry words for the next half a dozen or so slokas. Here's a purport here. Srila Prabhupada says, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that Narada Muni had delivered the entire family of Shyambhuva Manu, beginning with Priyavrata and Uttanapad. And he had delivered Uttanapada's son, Dhruva, and had even delivered Pachinabhari, who was engaged in fruitive activities. Nevertheless, he could not deliver Prajapati Daksha. Prajapati Daksha saw Narada before him because Narada had personally come to deliver him. Narada took the opportunity to approach Prajapati Daksha in his bereavement because the time of bereavement is a suitable time for appreciating Bhakti Yoga. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.16, four kinds of men: Arta, one who is distressed; Atarthi, one who is in need of money; Jigyasu, one who is inquisitive; and Gyani, a person in knowledge, try to understand devotional service. Prajapati Daksha was in great distress because of the loss of his sons, and therefore Narada took the opportunity to instruct him regarding liberation from material bondage. And the purport. Oma Gyanam Pinanda Chya Gyanam Chalakaya Chakshurani Pandat Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutare Simati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminitya Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nevishesha Shandavari Pasarisatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So here from text 31, we have heard how the Savalashas, they were delivered by Narada Muni. We heard yesterday how he used a tactic of affection, that your brothers, they've all gone back to Godhead. They were perfect. And they're your elder brothers, and you're very dharmic, so any dharmic person would follow his brothers. And they've attained perfection. So that was all he said, because it says, Sukadeva Goswami continued, the best of the advanced Aryans, after saying this much to the sons of Pratipati Daksha, Narada Muni, whose merciful glance never goes in vain, he left. So he didn't say much. From yesterday we heard the class, how he is. It's a continuation of yesterday's one. What he said yesterday was, O sons of Daksha, please hear my words of instruction attentively. You are all very affectionate to your elder brothers, the Hariyashvas. Therefore you should follow their path. And today he's saying, a brother aware of the principles of religion follows in the footsteps of elder brothers. Because of being highly elevated, such a pious brother gets the opportunity to associate and enjoy with demigods like the Maruts, who are all affectionate to their brothers. That's all he said, apparently. That was enough. Just like the Harivashas, when Narada preached to them, he told them, I think in the same thing, in one or two shlokas here, an allegory with about 10 different subjects in the allegory. Right? The hole where no one comes back, the country, there's only one king, there's only one person, and the man who, the unchaste lady, and the man who's married to her, the swan. Very deep, but they got it straight away. They didn't need a translation. We had the translations one after the other on each of those, what each of those words actually meant. They didn't even have that. This is Satya Yuga. Very smart, very good intelligence, very broad intelligence. And they were very sober. They were undergoing penances. And they got it immediately, but they didn't say very much. And it was just a short allegory, but they got it, and they thought, why bother? This is actually a better proposition than what our father wants us to do. Because you're talking about dharma, because Prajapati Daksha says, you know, this is your dharma. You have to perform your dharma, so you should go and your dharma is to populate the universe. That is your duty, is my sons. So that you should go and perform some tapasya to get the shakti to be able to do that. But real dharma, I guess Narada was indicating that real dharma is establishing one's relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, everything else is not. Yeah? It says right in the beginning of Bhagavatam, it kicks out this Kaitava Dharma, this cheating religions. Only that which is connecting one, a reawakening one's eternal relationship with Krishna, that is real Dharma. And the process that does that the most effectively is the best process. So therefore we instructed them in bhakti, because bhakti is the direct process, all the other processes are indirect. That's there's different paths mentioned, different in the scriptures, and they're coming from the Lord, and the Lord likes it like that, because there's some people, according to their natures, they're going to follow a particular way. Not everyone can accept the same principles, the same lifestyle, because of their association with the modes of nature, passion, raja or tama. So Daksha was associated with was rajistic, right? He had some desires. He had a good opinion of himself, that he was expert, and he was a big man, a great personality. He was more effulgent than demigods. The demigods actually stood up before him when he had that big jagya. When he came in, all the demigods stood up and respected him, except Lord Brahma and Shiva. Then he, because of his rajas, then he became angry at Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma's his father, he can understand, but his brother, then he was a little annoyed about that. So then that caused a lot of problems. This is a continuation of the problem we will hear later. A result of his cursing Krishna. The Daksha couldn't take to the direct process of devotional service, which is what Narada wanted, it indicates here. So he's saying to the second set of sons here, the real Dharma is to re-establish your devotion to Krishna. And everything else is more or less superficial. But there's a lot of superficiality. The whole material cosmic creation is superficial. Like the body is superficial. We don't actually need the body. So we don't need all the rest of what expands from this, from the tiny little soul, all this other superfluous stuff, material energy. We don't actually need it. In our essence, we don't actually need it. But we're placed into it because of our forgetfulness of Krishna, our disobedience to the order of Krishna. We're placed in it, and we begin to identify it with it. So to get out of that, then there's processes like karma, yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, shankhya yoga. But they're all how to become free from it. Ultimately, they're to purify one's existence. But they take a long, long time because they're indirect. I mean, when, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that the results of karma, at least action in Krishna consciousness, and the results of jnana yoga, they're all the same, right? Because the jnani, Krishna says, bahunam jamati. After many, many births, the jnani, then he understands Vasudeva Savamiti. And then he surrenders to Krishna in devotion. So the actual point is the same. The practice of karma yoga, they will get, by performing their karmas, they will purify themselves, because they're surrendered to Krishna's instructions, or they're surrendering to the Vedas, which are Krishna's instructions. So they're submitting themselves to Krishna, but it's indirect, because it's not Krishna's, they don't want to surrender to Krishna, that's not their goal. That's not the main goal. Or at least they want a lot of things on the way to surrender to Krishna. They're not ready just to give everything up and focus on Krishna. So therefore those the parents are there. So the parents purify them after many, many births. One becomes freed from passion and ignorance. Then one's consciousness becomes pure. One's coverings become pure. Then they can actually understand the essence. But if one is not ready, one cannot directly take to bhakti. One needs good fortune, good sukriti. So Daksha was in that category. He was a praviti margist, gung ho praviti, praviti and nivriti, the path of material enjoyment, to live your life, enjoy your life, and by doing that gradually get purified and elevated, and after many, many births, and you can gradually become perfect. Even they know that, like dharma, artha, karma, moksha, they know that the actual goal is moksha. But many people are not really interested in moksha. They're really interested in dharma, artha, and then they can enjoy the results as karma. So that's what people are mainly interested in. So that's what's mainly given in the scriptures. It says the karma kanda sections of the Vedas are the vast majority of the Vedas, because that's what people want. So they get purified like that, but it's a slow way. So Narada is saying, look, this is actually real dharma. So why you want to engage in all these other activities of the material world? Eventually, ultimately, you've got to give it all up again. So they took his advice and they practiced bhakti, the direct process. See, the goal of karma, yoga, and gyan is that one comes to understand Krishna, either seeing Krishna as a super soul like the yogis do, or understanding Krishna as the gyanis do, and then they surrender to him. But in bhakti, so you see the path is different from the goal. Therefore it's called indirect. It takes you to that point, and then you give up that path, and then you begin the path of bhakti, understanding Krishna's soul. Then you worship him, that's bhakti. But the process of bhakti from the beginning, that we worship Krishna without purification, but with knowledge, to some degree, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have faith in that. So then we worship him and with trying to develop bhakti. And by performing that, then the bhaktas, they get the results of karma, and they get the results of jnana, and they get the results of yoga. In other words, they get their satisfaction, they get their happiness, and they get their liberation. That's rolled in, that's immediate, because one immediately comes to the bhakti, immediately situates one on the transcendental platform. And even if you can't appreciate it's transcendental, you can appreciate it's a mode of goodness. Mostly, it will be in the activities of generally done in the mode of goodness. Results of the activities in the mode of goodness is knowledge and a sense of happiness. So immediately they're free, they're getting their happiness, but it's not through the gross senses. It's a subtle happiness. So either you're doing it for yourself or you're doing it for Krishna, still this path is better. The direct path is better. So then he convinced them. He says, you follow your brothers and you'll enjoy like the Maruts, because the Maruts is the wind gods, associates of Lord Indra. And they're a very tight group. When you hear, they're generally always together. When Indra's there, the Maruts are always, he always mentions the Maruts are with him, headed by Maruchi. And even the Maruts, interesting story, they came from the Ditti. They came from the line which produced, from Ditti, who produced all the demons. Her sister Aditi produced the devotionals. Of course, some devotees did come to Aditi, but from Ditti, they were born from that side, but they became devotees. The Maruts are a very unusual case, because they actually became, they got promoted to become demigods. Indra, when the Lord killed Diti's two sons, Hiranyakashipu, with Indra's help also, so she was she wanted to kill Indra. She knew she couldn't kill Vishnu. So then she asked her husband Kashyap for a boon, and he said, okay, you're a very good wife, chaste wife. And then she told him this is what she wanted, to someone who can, and then he went, oh no, what have I said? What a stupid woman, she wants to kill Indra, just because of her attachment to her children. So he said, anyway, you have to have your, I promise you the boon, but first you should follow this vow. Some Pumsha vow. It was a great vow of devotional austerity. And actually she had to worship Vishnu, and she had to perform these many austerities, and she became quickly purified by this. She became very pure. And she was pregnant. So Indra knew that this child was going to is meant for my death. So then he went round and he began to look for an opportunity to get rid of this threat. And because she's auntie. So he stayed around and served her very nicely and was very affectionate to her all the time. Then one day he noticed that she forgot some principles of cleanliness. I think after eating, she didn't wash her hands, mouth and feet. At least she didn't wash the back of her feet properly. And then she took rest, and that was in the twilight time. So Indra took advantage of this. She was open now. So then because he has mystic powers, he has the power of anima, becoming smaller than the smallest. So then he entered into her womb with his thunderbolt, and he saw her embryo there, that the child was there, glowing golden color, because she was very pure because of what this vrata she was performing. And with his thunderbolt, he cut it into seven pieces. Now those seven pieces, they assumed life, like a different soul into each of those seven pieces. And he was very surprised that, you know, and he took up it, and they was crying, Indra, don't kill us, don't kill us. He said, don't cry. Poof. Then he zapped him again, killed them. He cut him again into seven pieces. But then they all assumed life also. So now there's 49. And he thought, this is very wonderful, very extraordinary. It's not an ordinary thing. And they were praying to him, no, we're your followers, we're the Maruts. So then he realized that they were his people, his followers. So then he spared them. And then he told the whole story to Aditi, and she forgot her enmity towards him also. But because of that, because they're very dear to Lord Indra, then they got the position of becoming demigods. So the 49, they're always a very tight bunch. So he's given this example. You should follow your brothers in Dharma, just like the Maruts, because you can go and enjoy with on Marud Loka, you can enjoy. In other words, you can follow your brothers and enjoy in Vaikuntha. That was the example he gave. So then they took, then, of course, and when Daka heard about that, he was very angry. he was shaking. And so then Daksha went to meet him. Sorry. Narada went to see him, and he's using the logic of the, as he mentioned here, the Ata, Atati, Jigyasu, Gyani. These, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the four kinds of pious people, they come to me. These kind of people, they all want something, except the Gyani, but they approach me, these kinds. So especially in those in distress. When one is in distress, it means something happened but I didn't want to happen. Therefore we're distressed. So that means I'm not the controller. Things are out of my control. And this is disturbing to me. something serious happens and we feel that distress. that we're not, it's something that's beyond our control. So then the pride becomes leveled. The false ego becomes leveled. I thought I was, you know, doing great and I was the mover and doer, but all of a sudden this big thing has come across me, I can't do anything about it. So then one becomes a little humbled in times of distress. So in distress then sometimes you have no recourse. You don't have any faculty but to pray to God. You don't have any other recourse. So that is the Lord's mercy. So he said, those kind of people, they come to me. They're in distress. They can't help themselves. So God, help me. You turn to God. God, please help me. So this is that's the first kind. They're approaching the Lord, but it's not bhakti. Is no bhakti there. They're approaching, please, Lord, take away my distress. I'm offering you my problems. In other words, give me relief. Give me pleasure. On the other, next category, the arti is give me wealth. The next category is give me knowledge. Next category is, you know, I'm here out of a sense of duty. The jnani is the best. But in any case, nobody is going to actually serve Krishna for out of affection. So at best, it's shantaras, the jnani. So, but still, they're approaching Krishna, so it's considered there must be some bhakti there. Even though the goal is not Krishna's pleasure, the goal is my pleasure or my relief. But so he thought, now Dakta's really upset. He's really peeved because first group of sons, 100,000. Second group of sons is too much. He's really angry. So now he's a good candidate for hearing. Surrendering to Krishna because his plans have been thwarted. But his tactic didn't work. And when he got there, he wasn't lamenting, he was just super angry. So then he used that situation in a very interesting way, which will be discussed in the end of this chapter. How Narada didn't preach to him and he didn't go away even though he was cursing him. And Narada had another tactic which is very unusual. I won't spoil it because it's come at the end of this section. But it says whoever Narada sees, oh bless it doesn't go in vain. So somehow other, I don't know what happened. There's much more history of Daksha in the Bhagavatam. So the actual final result of Narada Muni's association, we may never know, but anyway, this section will point out the the great distinction between the Pravritti Marg and the Navritti Marg. That if one is affected by the mode of passionate ignorance too much, you can't actually surrender to Krishna purely. You can't take the pure devotional service. The modes that won't let you, right? Just like we try to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Difficult, even just to chant one mantra. Sometimes it's difficult, right? Mode of passion. Mind is always going here, there. even you're endeavoring to do it, you know, sitting down, it's a time, it's a right, the environment is right. Everyone's chanting japa in the holy dham, next to the Ganga, front of the deities. Still it's so difficult, right? mode of passion, you see? Something else to do, the mind not getting, because the mind's, there's no taste there because of our lack of adhika, then the mind's is going here, there, and intelligence also, but especially the mind is going here because it's taste we want. So in the mode of passion means one is impatient. One can't wait too long. You want You want something now. And so the mind is always, the mind doesn't stop. The mind is always searching for a comfortable situation and some happiness. That's the business. And it doesn't stop. Constantly, you see. So even if you try to curb that activity of the mind, it's very difficult, as we know. It's very, very difficult. Because it's always going out, looking for a better situation and some happiness. Only those two things. Otherwise it gets too tired. So this is we can learn this actual distinction. And those are too much affected by passion and ignorance. They just can't hear this message of Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam is one of the six Puranas. It's meant for those people in the mode of goodness. Six for those in a mode of ignorance and six for those in a mode of passion. Because they can't digest this, it's too much for them. Not that we're all necessarily in the mode of goodness, but we have somehow or other received some special mercy from the Vaishnavas. And we've been forced, in one sense, right? Ordered, no, you do it anyway, you do it anyway, you sit in here the Bhagavatam, you chant Hare Krishna, even if you don't want to, you associate with devotees, you offer your food in Mahaprasad, you only eat what is prasad, nothing of it. It's vaidhi, sadhana, this is a vaidhi, this is a pressure. We have to be burnt, molded in the fire of ordeal. No, just don't leave the association of Krishna and Krishna's service. Don't leave it. That's what's purifying you. Don't leave it somewhere or other. So that's our pressure. Even though there may be a lot of resistance because of our lower nature. Is always, it says the mind is like water. It always seeks the lowest level. Always trying to find it. And so then the pious people. We're talking about pious people, but they think no. This path of renunciation is ridiculous. And actually, he'll give so many good arguments. There are many arguments, good arguments. how it's wrong to become renounced prematurely. You should live your life. Right? When you come old, then you can think about these things, retiring and renouncing. So he gives some strong arguments for those in the mode of... But anyway, he's not going to accept it, and other people are not going to accept it. Just like when we were Mahaprabhu was having these nocturnal kirtans, not everyone could come in, only the pure devotees could come in and see those. So a lot of people used to stand outside, they got upset, and there was a lot of critics, they couldn't come in and see the kirtan. One Brahmana who has refused to come in, one time he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he cursed him, "I curse you that you will never enjoy life, material life." Mahaprabhu, thank you very much, it's a great blessing. Because when you enjoy material life, this fortifies the false ego. Yes, I can enjoy it. I'm feeling enjoyment. Yes, it works. Material life works. There is enjoyment there. I'm experiencing it. Who can deny it? I'm feeling that pleasure. And another time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when they were going to Advaita's house, so in between here and Shantipur, he and Lord Nityananda, there was a little cottage on the bank of the Ganga, and Mahaprabhu asked Nityananda, "Who lives there?" He said, "There's a household of sannyasi lives there." So Mahaprabhu said, "Oh, good fortune, let's go see him." Shakta sannyasi. His wife is probably wearing saffron and jatted hair. We have one here, this ashram. Sometimes they do it. After Gopurnima, they have this pancham dog, 5 days of kirtan, nam kirtan, lila kirtan. Very, right? You hear that one. He has two wives. They all wear saffron and they have jatted hair. So then when they arrived, the sannyasi saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was a Nithai, and he was charmed at the beautiful features. So he said, "I bless you. Happy life, beautiful wife, many children, good wealth." Mahaprabhu said, "Come on." He said, "That's not a blessing from someone from a sannyasi like you. Why didn't you bless me with Krishna bhakti? That is eternal and everlasting and real joyful." And the sannyasi said, "Huh? You try to do someone a good favor and they turn on you. Just see, this is the age of Kali Yuga. It's predicted like that." "What's wrong with this? What's wrong with having a... You're a sannyasi. Who's going to maintain you?" "No, you have to have these things. You need some maintenance." Mahaprabhu went, "Oh my God." So the Mahaprabhu mercifully preached to him. But it fell on deaf ears because he was in a mode of passion. Because Mahaprabhu told him, he said, "Listen, Goswami, everything is... destiny, everything is karma here. You get your food, you get your happiness and distress as it comes according to your karma, according to destiny. And if it was all meant for enjoyment, then why, you know, sometimes we don't get what we want. Sometimes happiness comes, unhappiness comes, sickness comes, distress comes, we don't want it. And at the end of life, everything is taken away. So how can you say that life is actually meant for enjoyment?" And the sannyasi, he smiled. He thought, now I see these scriptural injunctions are true. In Kali Yuga, everyone gets things back to front. He said, "At last, finally I've heard it directly from this little boy. He's telling me, he's trying to instruct me. You know, I'm..." Then he spoke out loud. He was thinking, "I've been to Ayodhya, I've been to Dwarka, I've been to Badrinath, I've been to Kanyakumari, I've been to Ayodhya, I've been to Banaras, I've been everywhere all around the world, I'm a sannyasi, and now you have to tell me what is right and what is wrong. I have to hear from a little child, a boy. What is this?" And Nityananda, that's okay, goes me. "I know. You're a great... I know of your glories," he said. Nityananda pacified him. "I know of your glories. He's a boy, don't take him so seriously." Okay, then he was happy that Nityananda... So let's... Anyways, he said, "Now you can take some... something to eat." So he said, "Well, we're in a rush, so you can pack something and we can eat it on the way." No, "You're here in my house. You go take bath in the Ganga. I'll prepare something. You come back nice and refreshed. Take prasadam, take a little rest. Go away." So then they came back and they had some fruits and milk and they offered it and they took the prasadam. And then the sannyasi told Nityananda, "Let me bring some happiness. Let me bring some ananda for you. We'll be really happy." So Nityananda was widely troubled because he was a shakta, those who drink wine. So he said, let's have a little happiness and we can together." So Mahaprabhu said, What is this ananda he's talking about? What is happiness?" He said, "I think it's wine." Vishnu, quickly washed hands and mouth and ran, went to the Ganga, and he jumped in the Ganga. But you see, when Mahaprabhu told him about the superior of bhakti, he got very angry. "I have to hear from a mere boy. I've been all around. You think I don't know what's right and what's wrong? No, you should. You live through life. Why not enjoy it? Why not enjoy beautiful women, beautiful food, fine clothes, and then at the end you do your renunciation. But now you can enjoy." So they can't hear that. You see, they can't bear to hear it. Mode of passion. Therefore, they got a different set of pranas, a different set of religious way, a path to follow. So Daksha was like that. He was a praviti margis. So he couldn't bear this. He becomes so angry. He even curses. Already he had done it before to Lord Shiva. because he was criticized, Lord Shiva, look at you, look how you dress, look at what you wear, look at you, you haven't got a house, and just come on. But it's the, you know, it's okay, you can go through life like that, but it's so dangerous, the pravritti mark, because it's offering facility to satisfy your senses, which is what we want. At least it's what the false ego is dictating to us. the purpose of existence is enjoyment, which is true, no doubt. Purpose of creation is enjoyment, right? The Lord expands, He creates. Why? For increases enjoyment. So the purpose of creation is enjoyment. And we are enjoyers. That's our nature, is to enjoy ananda, satchit ananda. That's our nature. We should be enjoying. We should be feeling bliss. But when we're covered with maya and this false ego, we identify with the body and part of this material world, and then we're not feeling bliss, because that's covered. Krishna's taken away remembrance. From me comes remembrance, intelligence, forgetfulness. So Krishna, when we're placed into material, then He takes away remembrance of Him. That's the first thing He does. So if there's no Krishna, there's no devotion to Krishna, I'm here and I want happiness, I'm not satisfied, so let me go and do it as best I can, according to my body, according to my facility. So that's the material world. So this pravritti marg is going to offer all these things. No, you perform these pious activities, perform these dharmic activities, and then you'll get a lot of facility to enjoy. The real business is actually engage you in pious activities to bring you to the mode of goodness. That's the real business of this. The Vedas are not to be blamed for giving a lower path. it's to engage those people under proper direction, and then they gradually come purified till they can come to the mode of goodness to understand. Otherwise they can't bear to hear it, understand these things. So it's not a fault with the Vedas that they seem contradictory, saying contradictory things. Krishna likes it like that, because if it's really black, white, clear, then everyone will understand, no, this is what we have to do. But in their heart they don't want it, they'll be fighting against it, so let them go that way. Krishna says, what is the use of going against your nature? What will you accomplish by going against your own nature? But you should understand what your real nature is. That is, Krishna does. Everyone's nature is the servant of Krishna. But when we're identifying as our swadharma, or our temporary situation, then that's rajagun, you see. Activities in the mode of passion always end in distress, as Krishna says. Activities in the mode of goodness end in happiness, knowledge. Those in ignorance end in pain, suffering, madness. So therefore, at least come to the mode of goodness. So even bhakti is generally, it's the culture of bhakti is in the mode of goodness. So the culture is there, we follow the culture. But the goals are different. We follow, like, you know, we follow Varnashram and what everyone else follows. But the goal is different. We don't follow Varnashram to become purified and to get liberation. We follow Varnashram so we can serve Krishna in a congenial atmosphere. It's the best system. And that's all. So we accept the culture, but we don't accept the philosophy, because we understand the purpose of Varnashram is to purify existence. As soon as you engage in devotional service, you're already purified. As soon as you engage in devotional service, that's a platform of liberation. We don't perceive it, but that's the actual fact, because it's actually sudasattva. It's not, what does Krishna mean? It doesn't mean anything in this material world. What is service to Krishna? It has no material meaning, you see. So that's the transcendental platform. But at least the activities are based in those activities which are recommended in the mode of goodness. You rise early in the morning, take a bath, put tilak, go to the temple. see the deity, clap your hands, chant, read this, study the scripture, take prasadam, like this, worship Tulsi, Ganga, with all the activities and mode of goodness. Of course, your profession, your occupation, may be that of a Sudra, Gachi, or Vaishya, which is generally designated as Raja, Tama, or like this. But if you're doing it for Krishna, then it's also transcendental. So even if you take an occupation of those in the mode of passion or ignorance, then that is, you're not to be considered a Vaishya or a Gachi or a Sudra. That's an offense to consider a Vaishnava in the bodily designations, because they're actually perfect, they're serving Krishna. According to their nature, they're serving Krishna. And Krishna's not also making any distinction between who's serving, whether it's a Vaishya, Kachya, Sudra, or Brahma. Krishna doesn't make any distinction. Who is serving, who is the most sincere, who is serving me sincerely, that's attracting Krishna. It's not the superficial surrounding. So that pravritti marg is so dangerous, because it's, you know, the whole material world is so vast and it's so attractive, you see. So we can so easily get sidetracked into, you know, so much distraction. That's the whole material world, is the whole cosmic manifestation is a distraction. And it's managed by Maya Devi, who's expert. So it's very attractive. And so it can be very dangerous like that. Padam padam yat vipatam, dangerous. Every step, you know, because you really start to believe, yeah, you're enjoying, you're comfortable, you're better off than other people, you're in the mode of goodness, satisfied. then you become complacent. Like, you don't hear of demigods going back to the Krishna Loka, Godhead. But it's so nice there, there's no problems. So the reverses are actually good. But as you advance through the modes of nature, your life becomes easier, peaceful, you become happy, not wise. And then you become complacent like that also. Krishna says mode of goodness is also binding. So one should understand bear in mind always the actual purpose. Because we're thinking the purpose is my pleasure, my satisfaction. That's what we're actually looking for. That's actually more important of a criteria than Krishna's happiness, generally for most of us. Until you've got past the anatta and the vritti, until you come to nishtha, then, and even then, generally it's my happiness which is the main factor, the driving force. Well, my benefit. So, you know, then pure bhakti, actually, it doesn't really start in a dynamic way or a real way. It means there's real attraction until you get past anatta and vritti, the ruchi, nishtha, and then the ruchi. So, you see dakshas one side, his sons on the other side. His sons have all gone back to Godhead, dakshas still here. Although he's a big man, but he's still in the material world and he's still suffering happiness and distress, and he's going through, you know. So all his good philosophy and, you know, he's talking about Dharma and, you know, because it's his service actually to Krishna. So yes, something's true there, but it's mixed up with the mode of passion. Therefore his intelligence is not properly sharp. So you see this contrast between Narada Muni and whose only business is to glorify Krishna, because he loves Krishna, and Daksha. So then we can learn how we can take from these two examples and find out which one we're closer to or leaning to. So that's why these stories here, we can relish the pastimes of the pastimes of Krishna and his devotees, and also learn, you know, what not to do, like in the case of Daksha. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sarvabhara ki jai, Dai Gopamandi Hare Hare. It's 9 o'clock, but if anyone wants to ask a question, I will be here. No roots? The allegory is given, which way the Maruts follow their brothers. There wasn't two sets of Maruts, there was only one, 49. But the example was, they were very tight. They're always together, even as demigods. Maruti is the head one, but when you hear about Indra, I mean, they're mentioned all over the place, Bhagavad Gita, and, you know, of the Marut, of the demigod, the wind gods and the Maruts. They're always there. They're always like a tight group, attached to each other, you know. That was the allegory he is using. Maybe. Anyway, they're very close brothers. They support and follow each other. We have a letter from the airwaves, Akash. How to deal with unlimited subtle material desires at different floors of the building of bhakti we have constructed, from Visharup, Ahmedabad. Hare Krishna, Mr. Visharup. He's always got a special question. He's a frequent visitor to Mayapur. How to deal with unlimited subtle material desires at different floors of the building of bhakti we have constructed. Yeah, very nice. We are constructing a building of bhakti. I have to deal with them. You have to deal with them. As best you can. As long as this our protection, our protective insulation is no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating. If you stay within that, there's quite a lot of space. You've got quite a lot of freedom. So anywhere within that, you're kind of, you know, you're still under the shelter of Guru. It's just that, and the different, of course, we do have different levels of the building of bhakti. That is the bhakti lata beach is growing. it grows through anatta nivritti. This line is nishta. But in anatta nivritti, your actual progress is going like that, because even in with each section, anatta nivritti, you have good weak points and strong points. Some areas of your devotion you really like and you're really enthusiastic, others you don't like, and then there's the material desires. So all the time, it's going like this. But if you continue, you find you're going up. That's the process. So when you're reaching that nishta, there's the end of anatta nivritti. when you break through that nishta, then you're actually peaceful. But then you can go down again. And then you come up again. But then you can come up gradually higher. But and then you go down again. So it's like this. But you, overall, if you're sincere, then you're gradually going up. But you're also experiencing this floor, this level, and this level at different times. It's a gradual process. It takes a long time to actually get through this, to get through to nishta, to get out of anatta nivritti. That's very elevated. It'll take your whole lifetime, practically. It means that's the platform of self-realization. You know, you're peaceful when you're really peaceful. We don't. It's not an easy. It's only a little way up the ladder, but it's very. But from there, from once you're peaceful, then it's easy. Then you'll fly to. You go very quickly, Ruchi. Ashakti, Bhava, Prema. Once you've got past that part, because here you're equipoised. You're getting taste. Now you're into taste. See, it's taste what we're looking for. We're attracted to Maya and material energy because of taste. There's refuge, there's peace, and there's happiness. That's why we go there. Otherwise, why are we going there? That's what's distracting us. We think there's something better. Therefore, we can't stay fixed on our chanting, for instance. And of course, crazy things just coming anyway from somewhere and would have no meaning at all. But generally, you go where your heart is. And if you've experienced pleasure and you experience security, then that attachment will be there. So that's what it is. We have experienced it in the material world. We've experienced happiness. We've experienced relief. So naturally, there's attachment there because we're not getting it from the spiritual platform. And these are the two things we want. Of course, we want devotion to Krishna, but in the meantime, we're concerned for ourselves. So these are the two things we're looking for. So because Maya is offering, but not for long, when you're really happy, when you're really having a good time, how long does it last? Not very long. When you're feeling really secure, everything's going, how long does it last? Not long. It's a very flickering, you see. But because the experience of happiness, experience is relief is there, then attachment is there. And what's the alternative? See, you have to have that. You've got to have it. That's how nature, sat and ananda. Eternal, that's peaceful, and ananda, that's happiness. So you have to have it. You can't stop that drive for it. If you're a normal person, you can't stop that drive. Because that's the soul's yearning to experience its fullness, completeness, which is stifled in this body. and this misidentity. So therefore, what we're looking for through this body in the material objects, which is illusion. But there's a sense of relief, there's a sense of happiness. And because we don't have anything else, then that's the best we got. So we become attached to it. But when you get to Nishtha, you're getting taste. You're getting real taste, real happiness from the spiritual platform, from your service. So therefore, although this taste, this other taste is still showing and it's still available, if you can get it somewhere else, why would you go there? So unless there's an alternative, it's difficult to say no to Maya. Until you've got an alternative. So that starts, your alternative starts really at Nishtha. Before that, it's just your determination, your intelligence, your knowledge. That's what you're dependent on to save you from going into forbidden territory. You're dependent on your own ability, which of course is not, we're infallible. We're fallible living entities, imperfect senses. So that drive won't stop, is it? So unless you get it from here, you have to get it from there. And if it's not conducive to Krishna consciousness, then you've got this dilemma. Oh, Krishna consciousness is so difficult. Why? It's denying my pleasure, it's denying my happiness. One has to voluntarily, you see, you can't voluntarily give it up. It's already, the taste is there, is it? Desire is there, it's in the heart. You can't voluntarily give it up. Because it's actual real happiness, and it's actually real peace. It doesn't last long, but the feeling is real. It's illusion, but it feels real. We may understand the knowledge that it's illusion, but still, it's a real illusion. So that's the problem. Therefore, attachment comes to that because it's filling that need. There is a need, you see. So it's fulfilling that need. So then, to say no to that, if it's not conducive to Krishna consciousness, we say no. If it's conducive, we can take. If it's not conducive, then we say no. So that's the difficult part, you see. So until you get something better, you can't actually be free from that. So that's why it's difficult to control your senses. Prabhupada says sometimes impossible. See, it's humanely impossible to control the senses and the mind completely. Who can do it? As soon as we leave here, we'll go out and we see, oh, that's nice, this is nice. And we're thinking, that's, you know, how we can enjoy this. Every, you know, the mind is doing that all the time. What benefit can I get from this material energy? I'll walk this way home, it's a nicer walk. I will enjoy my... So you're always thinking of our own happiness, you see. Because we've lost the real happiness, the actual Sanatana Dharma, the happiness, is in service to Krishna, when you're in relations with Krishna. That's real, because Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. So if you're in contact with the reservoir of pleasure, that's the greatest happiness. So automatically that happiness is taken care of when you connect with Krishna. Then you don't have to worry about going into Maya, to adjusting the material energy, adjusting your life to get happiness or to get a better situation. Because you have satisfaction from Krishna. So it's already there, it's already in, that's your constitution. So the happiness should be, you should be find that within. That's in your relationship with Krishna. But that won't happen in a permanent, more permanent way till you get very advanced. Practically a Shakti. When it's permanent, and then it gets up to Stai Bhava when it's permanent. But at Ruchi, you'll be peaceful. You'll have an alternative to Maya. You're actually experiencing your relationship with Krishna to some degree. So then you can, when you've got something better, then you can be indifferent. Until then, you've got to bite the bullet. That's another nevriti. So, Vishwarup, happy house building. But don't forget the elevator, bhakti. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Prabhupada ki jai.